Hello, I'm Will Stein, and welcome to Geography Island Jams. This podcast is in the same style as the BBC Radio 4 Desert Island Disc series, whereby each episode I ask my interviewee what 8 songs, book, and luxury item they would want to take with them if they were stranded on a desert island. For rights reasons, the music has not been included in the podcast. You can find links to the 8 songs on the LSE Geography and Environment website. I hope you enjoy. Welcome to Geography Island Jams. With me today, I have LJ Silverman. LJ is the first head of LSE Generates since it was founded about 3 years ago after initially working at LSE Careers. Whilst LJ was born in Liverpool, she spent the majority of her childhood growing up in Hertfordshire. After finishing school, she went on to do a BA and Masters in Modern and Medieval Languages at Cambridge Trinity College. Before coming to LSE, LJ ran a careers and recruitment consultancy focused on the environmental sector. Additionally to this, LJ has worked in television, helping produce reality TV shows such as Big Brother, as well as being a voiceover on children's television programs. Some other fun information about LJ: she has a garden full of guinea pigs, which she says have breeding habits which are out of control. She recently got a puppy on the first day of lockdown, which her family has named Quarantina. And she once went on a disaster date with Daniel Bedingfield. So welcome, LJ.
Hi there. Hi, Will. Thanks for having me on. It's such a great idea for a university podcast. So well done.
I first wanted to ask about the dog. Have you and your family always wanted to get a dog, or was it completely inspired by the pandemic?
Yeah, which begs the question whether dogs are for life or just for not just for global pandemics. But yeah, we had a momentary panic the day before lockdown happened. A, because I didn't have a birthday present for my daughter, and B, because we are all quite extroverted as a family, and I had absolutely no idea how we were going to fill those hours and days and now months. So I had one of these kind of impulsive moments and basically bought the puppy on the spot. She is just as feral as my children, but she has provided so many great moments and has kind of cuddled us all back to life. So on the whole, I think it's it was a good buy. But yeah, her name is Quarantina, and she's
what breed?
She's a Cavapoo-Shon, which is supposed to be the most intelligent of dogs, but I think ours may be an exception to the rule.
And it must be crazy in the house, but you've also got these guinea pigs. So how many guinea pigs do you have?
We currently have 11. We had 4 born yesterday. That has been a bit of a disaster. I persuaded my husband to buy them, and I promised him that they were the most low maintenance of pets that you could possibly have. And then didn't realise that we'd bought a man and a woman. and they produced some babies that we thought we'd sexed properly, but lo and behold, we hadn't. And so over Christmas time, our living room, half of it was kind of presents and Christmas tree, and the other half was just tiny little rodents.
Oh, wow.
Which was fun. And then, got a whole lot. the plot thickened when we then got rid of all of the offspring, thinking that we'd sex them right, because you have to give guinea pigs out in pairs, otherwise they die of loneliness. And we'd sex them all wrong. So about 7 weeks later, I had all these lovely calls from people that we'd given them to, saying, we have more guinea pigs in our hutch than we thought we'd started off with. So yeah, it's provided us with lots of laughs, but I'm not really sure where it's headed, because they just don't stop breeding. But yeah. And if anyone wants a guinea pig, then you know where to find me.
And before you tell me about your first song, can you tell me anything more about this date with Daniel Bedingfield?
Yeah, well, when I was writing this down, I actually thought, I'm not sure our audience of kind of under 30s are actually going to have heard of Daniel Bedingfield, which has probably excluded a whole part of our listeners, which is slightly problematic. But Daniel Bedingfield was a pop star in the early 2000s, maybe. Anyway, we met, and he's quite impulsive, actually. And he was like, do you fancy going on a date? And we did, and I was so giddy with excitement that I acted in a completely horrendously awful way, where I just thought it might be funny after a few drinks to try and get as many of his song titles into the conversation, and I thought that would just be really intelligent and hilarious, and he'd then want to marry me. But surprise, surprise, it didn't work out that way. And we were waiting for our food in Soho restaurant, and I'd be like, oh, we've been waiting for ages, I've got to get through this. And at the end, I thought, I'll just kind of give him the, if you're not the one, why does my heart feel so glad today? And lo and behold, he didn't invite me out on a second date.
Oh, what a story.
Yeah, never mind.
Is your first song Danny Bedingfield?
It's not actually, it's not. However, I do have to pre-warn you that I think if you've tuned in hoping to hear a highly sophisticated musical playlist, then you might want to log off now. I'm definitely more kind of Disney than Drake.
Oh, amazing.
But I must say, like, music for me definitely kind of elicits those dopamine hits. I love listening to music, and on my jogs, it's really kind of kept me going when I've had way too much cheese and alcohol the night before and I can't really be bothered. It's kind of kept me going, and music generally is a big part of my life, and there's always something playing in the house. So I'm really excited to be able to share some of the songs. The first one is actually by a band called Tribalistas. I don't know if you've heard of them. They're a kind of a Brazilian musical supergroup. And the song I chose was called Já Sei Namorar. That's probably awful Portuguese, so apologies if you are Portuguese or Brazilian. But it actually reminds me, not of Brazil or Portugal, but of my gap year in Rome. So as part of my degree, as you mentioned earlier, we had to go out and spend some of our time abroad learning the language and kind of experiencing the local life. And I made a promise to myself that I was going to integrate as much as possible into Italian life that year and make it really worthwhile to understand the culture, not just the kind of the grammar. And I happened to make friends with a really cool group of Romans. And they basically as you might know, Italians are so proud of their country and rightly so. And we just have this amazing time where we'd go on the weekends, we'd kind of escape to these dazzling untouched hot springs in the countryside or near the sea, or we'd gather together at someone's country house and kind of have this really simple but beautiful way of living. And I really love how with Italians, and when you make a friend, they'll just do anything for you without needing to ask anything. So if they have a kind of hint that something's wrong, they'll come and ask you, what can I do? Do you need money? I mean, they're brilliant. And it wasn't actually easy living in Rome. There were some real shockers, and it's tough if you're not from Italy, I think, sometimes. But those friendships really made it worthwhile. And this song reminds me so much of that and the kind of brilliant aspect of this kind of exterior lifestyle that the Italians do so well. So yeah, it's an awesome song.
Amazing. So LJ, you're head of LSE Generates. For those who aren't familiar, can you say a bit why it was founded and what it does?
Yeah, so LSE Generate is the entrepreneurship home for students and alumni at the school. And it's basically kind of an end-to-end support program for anyone that is interested in building or developing or scaling a business that really does contribute in some way to a better tomorrow. And it came out of, I used to work at LSE Careers, and the offering just grew and grew and grew. And we realized that actually, like other universities, we really wanted to create a hub for this kind of innovation. And we were kind of late to the game. So LSE has always been known so you graduate and you either go left to the city or right to government. And what we were starting to see was that students realised that actually they could solve these problems that they were wrestling with by themselves with a bit of access to capital. And so they started building these businesses, really kind of socially responsible ones. And what was really nice was that we didn't have to say, you must have a kind of social impact element or component to your business plan, because they just came through the school with this idea that actually everything needs to be social, and if not, it's antisocial. And that was really refreshing. And suddenly we realized that a kind of a combination of social sciences and innovation was just a really powerful force for good. So we put a whole load of resources into that. And we've just recently opened a co-working space, which is, well, it was awesome until that little bug hit. But it's just an amazing community, which is so important when you are growing your business, because it can be extraordinarily lonely. But it's awesome. And I've got two incredible managers, so David Coombe and Julia Black, who I spend most of my life fangirling, because she's just so inspiring as an academic, but also as a kind of a relationship builder. And she's been the kind of main cheerleader of Generate. It's just a brilliant place to come, whether you're just trying or you're kind of, you're wondering whether entrepreneurship might be for you, but you're not quite sure, or whether you've already launched a business and you want to take it to the next level. And we do all kinds of things, from mentoring, we do international treks, we have all the panels, we have hackathons, and it's, yeah, I love coming to work every day, and I think I'm really fortunate in that. And as a careers consultant before, I didn't realise, that's not what everyone experiences. And so I consider consider myself super, super lucky in that way.
Do you have any tips or advice for people who are thinking about starting their own company or launching an idea?
Lots. I think find a problem that you are so passionate about solving. So one that you think about on the bus or you talk to your friends about when you're sitting in the pub, the kind of problem that you do anything to contribute to its solution. Because that is the thing that's going to get you through those tough times, which very much will definitely happen. And if you have that drive and that kind of that desire to make an impact in that particular area, that is what's going to kind of keep you going when the going gets tough. And we've seen that actually recently with the pandemic, where in some cases businesses have stalled or business development has kind of halted altogether. And what keeps those students or the alumni going is that original reason that they set up the business. So I think that kind of passion, and passion sounds so cheesy these days, but it is really important here. And then just basically market test. Make sure that there are enough people who are going to buy your product or use your service. So make sure that it's not too much of a saturated market, but there is definitely something there for you to fill the gap. And that just makes it a hell of a lot easier when you get started.
Fabulous. Can you now tell me about the second song you'll be taking with you?
Yeah, so the second song is actually Italian, so kind of a nice segue into the next one. It's called Più Bella Cosa. Again, sorry, my accent is horrendous, even though I graduated in the language. And interestingly, the song isn't related to my time in Italy, but actually when I was in Switzerland, so the second part of my gap year, I spent in this tiny village called Lenzerheide. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. I think Federer now has a really beautiful massive house there, and it's great for skiing. But actually Switzerland really comes alive in summer, and I heard actually someone on a previous podcast talking about that, and I could totally relate to it, because you have festivals, you have the beauty of just the kind of gorges and the mountains, and it's just really beautiful and bright, and they have quite a simple, in some ways, a simple life. So we had these, they're called tunnel festa, which are like really basic parties in literally some kind of underground tunnel thing. And I just had so many great nights meeting new people. I was actually working in a hotel, so lots of contacts there. And Eros Ramazzotti, he's kind of like, he's one of these cheesy, maybe a bit like, oh dear, I don't know, I'm going to embarrass myself here, but maybe like Boyzone or E17 in our times, but very cheesy and very kind of stereotypical Italian in a way. And this song would always play, and we'd all kind of jump onto the dance floor, and it was just a really fun kind of carefree time. And it reminds me actually when I'm talking to students about this, kind of when you're in your 20s and one student called it their defining decade. It's when you really do have this kind of freedom and time just to live life. You don't have mortgages, you don't have three feral children and 77,000 guinea pigs, and you can just go for it. And my time in Italy and my time in Switzerland was an example of that. I was there actually when 9/11 happened, and because Switzerland is landlocked and you're protected by mountains, it was a really kind of comforting place to be during that time when everything was just so uncertain and no one knew what was going on, and it was a really, really nice place to be at that time. Ironically, I then failed my German oral exam, because in Switzerland the accent is more of a dialect, it's so strong, it's like a Brummy version of German. And so when I went in for my oral exam, the lady interviewing me was just like, sorry, what did you say? Yeah, had a great time, but then failed.
I didn't realize it was that different.
It really is. It's really beautiful. It's quite melodic. And now in London, when I hear someone from Switzerland, I suddenly turn around and I try and engage in conversation, then forget that I've actually forgotten my language.
How many languages do you speak?
So I speak French, German, Italian, English sometimes. And that's it. I'm trying to learn Portuguese and Hebrew, but that's one of those lockdown activities that you promise you're going to start, and then you do about 2 pages and then give up and make banana bread again.
So LJ, you were born in Liverpool, but I'm right in thinking you spent most of your time growing up in Hertfordshire?
Yeah, so was born in Liverpool, so lost the accent pretty quickly, as you can probably hear. My mum still has it. It's really funny when she gets either excited or angry. Her accent goes from this like posh St. Albans accent into a Liverpudlian accent. But she loved it. And my memories, we left, I think, when I was 5 or 6. So there's not that many memories, but I do love going back and I love Liverpudlians. I absolutely love them. I find them hilarious, really friendly, open, and very different from kind of people in London. I spent most of my time in St. Albans, and then obviously went over to Cambridge, went to London as everyone does when they graduate, and then did what I promised I would not ever do, which was come back to St. Albans. And here I am now.
After finishing school, you went to do your undergrad and master's at Cambridge. Do you have any favourite memories from your time there?
So Cambridge was brilliant. It was very much a bubble, as you'd imagine. And I found friends for life there. So my kids are now friends with my friends' kids. And after a few drinks, we'll often discuss dreams of setting up a commune, which we then regret the next day. But I actually really feel for students now who are kind of coming to university with this COVID cloud hanging over them. And university for me was so much more than just the teaching. And it's just this kind of holistic experience that stays with you. And London, I think, is the extreme version of that. And because of what's on your doorsteps, you've got the comedy, the theatre, the flower markets, the food markets, the festivals. And I'm really happy, actually, that LSE is trying to kind of pull out all the stops to try and create, to the best of their ability, this experience that allows for the kind of freedom of adulthood that you're just not going to get if you're sitting in Zoom box. And I think it might look radically different in a way this year, but as long as there are those opportunities to kind of discuss the meaning of life at 4 o'clock in a bar, even if it's 2 meters away from that other person, then that's a win. And I think that's really important, and my experience at Cambridge was just kind of compounds that. I don't remember, maybe I shouldn't be saying this on a university podcast, but I don't necessarily remember sitting in the lectures as much as the kind of the evenings in someone's dorm, and much more the kind of the stuff that happens outside the classroom.
Fab, can you now tell me about the third song you'll be taking with you?
Yes, so the third song, this is not about to be played on any of the radio stations that all the cool kids are listening to. It's called Love Shone Down. I think it's by, I looked it up, but Boyce and Stanley, whoever they are, if they're listening, sorry that I didn't know them. It's actually sung by 5-year-olds usually, and mainly during nativity services around the beginning of December. And I know this is a really random choice, but the reason I chose this one was because I think the stereotype of a nativity show is all these kind of beautiful, literally angelic scenes of kind of kids scrubbed up with halos and all the Christmas paraphernalia. And I actually find the reality of it slightly different. I find this time of year so busy, and I kind of run from work parties, winding down the term with the students and funding competitions and school drinks and buying teachers presents and arguing where to spend New Year and Santa and all these crazy things. And I often literally fall into these nativity shows off the back or during a work call, slightly hungover, really frazzled, manically trying to get a shot of one of my kids before I have to run off to grab a train back into London. And this song is so beautiful, and it always stops me in my tracks and just reminds me of, and this sounds again really cheesy, but the important things and just the importance to slow down and savor the moments. And it allows me to kind of gain a better perspective of what is important during these times. And I think for students as well, so founder wellness for us is really important, and supporting students as they build a business. And yes, they need the business basics and the kind of technical component of that understanding, but they also need to understand how to look after themselves as entrepreneurs. Like, they don't have managers, they don't always have a support network, and they can get kind of frazzled. And I often tell them about that kind of December feel, and just the importance to kind of carve out moments of rest and not try and do everything, because it never ends well.
If you could invite anyone in the world to a dinner party, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Oh my goodness, so I find that a really easy one. I am totally in love with Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Do you know her?
Yeah, of course.
So Fleabag. Yeah, Fleabag, and she wrote Killing Eve, and she's just, so brilliant. She's another example of, like, in the way I was explaining Mum, where she just creates these amazing programs where you have these kind of poignant moments where you feel you're kind of going to burst into tears and your heart is exploding. And then just these hilarious moments. And actually the guinea pig inspiration came from her. Oh, wow. But I spend lots of days imagining that I'm her best friend, and it hasn't yet happened. But I'm not giving up just yet. I think you just have such a fun dinner party with her on a whole load of levels. You could talk about big themes of life and you could laugh till your stomach hurted. And so, yeah, she would definitely be my first choice without a moment of hesitation.
Can you now tell me about the fourth song you'll be taking with you?
Yes, so the fourth song I'm taking with me is Cups. It's by Lulu and the Lampshades. I think it was revived by them earlier, I think around 2009. And it's kind of an a cappella folk song. And there's a few reasons behind behind this song choice. The actual kind of percussion routine, if you Google it, it's kind of gone viral on YouTube. And the actual percussion routine has been used by my very loose interpretation of homeschooling. This was definitely a music lesson activity, just because I couldn't think of anything else to do. And the kids have loved like kind of getting this routine right. And it's taken up at least 20 minutes of a day, which is a win. But it's also the theme tune for this brilliant program that I don't actually have time to watch that much TV. But it's called Mum, and it's this brilliant kind of comedy series, and it's really reflective of that, you know, that kind of renaissance of TV recently where there's so much good stuff, and it's one of those programs where you get these kind of outstanding feelings that are really deep and beautiful and yet so simple and hilarious at the same time, and I loved watching that, and actually the words are quite bittersweet because I watched this program with one of my best friends that I don't actually get to see anymore. And in the song, the words are, "You're gonna miss me. You're gonna miss me when you're gone." Oh no, actually, "You're gonna miss me when I'm gone. And you're gonna miss me by my talk." And I really miss her every day. And she set the bar really high for friendship, which is also good because, you've got a great template for creating strong friendships from that. But she's awesome, and this program is absolutely brilliant. I encourage anyone to watch it. And again, going back to the kind of student side of things, I when we're talking about time management, I always say, like, even in your diary, like, block off an hour just to zone out and watch TV, because in a way that just energizes you to get up and then to start working on your plan again, or to start contacting investors, or to carry on with your market testing. But you do need to really think about how you use your day when you haven't got that kind of university style routine, and you need to think really carefully about how you're going to spend your hours.
So before coming to the LSE, you worked for a variety of television shows as well as doing some voiceovers. Do you have any experiences from that time which you think are worth sharing?
Yeah, so I worked in television for quite a while. I worked on Big Brother and some kind of reality shows for about kind of 3 to 4 years. Did some voiceovers, and you know what, it was so fun. It was the first job out of university. It was in Soho. It was really intense, probably quite incestuous, and but the nature of working in Soho is such that you get so into your project that it's as if your life depends on it. And I had to be reminded quite often that I was not saving lives, and actually this is just escape to the country. Like, I'm not finding the cure to cancer. And you just sometimes need to get a bit of perspective and someone from the outside world to say, come on, calm down, it's just a reality TV program. And so it was so fun, it was so exciting. I very rarely got back to my house before 4 a.m, and there was lots of parties, and it's the kind of thing to do in your kind of early 20s. But I just felt that I wasn't using anything for what I'd learned at Cambridge. I wasn't really transferring a skill set, and I thought, yeah, 3-4 years would be fine, but then I needed to move on to something else.
Of course. And do you have a favorite show in which you worked on?
You know what, Big Brother, as much as I wouldn't watch it now, and I probably wouldn't let my kids watch it, we worked on the post-production side, so the editing side, and it was amazing, just from a kind of psychological, anthropological angle, to think about how someone's personality, how someone was in real life, and yet with a few kind of tweaks a few kind of edits, you could completely change their personality. And that's why obviously this worked. And it was just, it was slightly petrifying, but really amazing. And that was a real eye opener. And since then, I've always had that kind of eye when I've watched documentaries and other reality shows. And it's kind of, yeah, you have to just remind yourself that this is not actually reality, as most people know already.
And then can you now tell me about your fifth song?
Yeah, so my fifth song is, I only recently discovered this singer, which might be, again, a horrific apology. But Imogen Heap. Do you know Imogen Heap?
It rings a bell, actually.
So, I mean, to be honest, I could take any of her songs. So Good Night and Go, Hide and Seek. I only discovered her at the beginning of lockdown. But she, I love her music. It's really uplifting. And given that we have so much more time to try out new things and different types of music, I mean, I know that like Newton discovered the theory of calculus while he was stuck inside. I definitely, I'm not on that kind of level of discovery. Just learning about new podcasts and songs has been a really, it's kind of just been a really nice distraction from the kind of groundhog feel of lockdown. And so quite often when I go jogging, I have Imogen Heap in my ears, and that keeps me going when I'm knackered or just don't want to jog up that hill. So she's cool. I really recommend listening to her. She's brilliant.
So as well as working in television, you ran your own careers and recruitment consultancy, which focused on the environmental industry?
Yeah. So when I was working in television, I had a call from a headhunter to ask if I was interested in headhunting. And I had no idea what headhunting was. Some strange images went through my mind, but I went to the interview and got the job. And it was really fun. It was, I think if you like talking to people, then it's brilliant. And you do earn a lot of money. And coming out of university with a ton of debts, I wiped them away pretty quickly, met some great friends. And then my manager was such that he gave us the kind of flexibility to focus on the areas that we're interested in. I wasn't that interested in finance. It didn't turn me on. So I decided to focus more on climate change recruitment. And that was so fun. And the people that you meet, because again, like I was saying earlier, I have this drive for solving a social problem. The conversations were interesting. The goal with our recruitment company was to make 50 calls a day, which was my idea out of heaven, because it meant I could just be on the phone all day talking to some really interesting people. So I loved it. But then I realized that actually to start up your own business, all you need is a phone and a laptop. And so that's what I did. I left the company with a friend, Kat, and we started up our own renewable energy business. And I did that until I got pregnant with my first daughter. And then realised that actually kind of going around, because I went around the European business schools and kind of discussed climate change recruitment with their students. And I realised that actually going around Europe with a baby and a nappy bag and a laptop in the other hand was actually quite stressful. So the job at LSE came about and I went for it and I got it. And it was brilliant. And I'm still there now.
Fab. And can you now tell me about the sixth song you'll be taking with you?
Yes. So the sixth song I will be taking with me is Florence. So Florence and the Machine, Shake It Out I chose. I ummed and ahed about which song. I think there's something about Florence that is really striking, and it's not a kind of a conventional beauty, but it's really stunning nonetheless. And the song that I picked, Shake It Out, and there are some words in there which are really kind of pertinent, I think, to the situation that we face today with lockdown, around kind of mental health and well-being. I read a really interesting article about actually how through lockdown, a lot of people that often experience anxiety normally, actually they are constantly preparing for the worst case scenario. So in some cases, lockdown was that, and they've actually dealt with it really well. But I know I know that a lot of people, a lot of my friends or relatives or some of my really close friends have had a lot of issues, and not just during the kind of pandemic, but generally. And as I said, part of the Generate program is focused on founder wellness, because we just think that is so, so important. And this this song is that encouragement. I think one of the lines is, it's always darkest before the dawn, and this reminder that it will get better, and to encourage you to cling on. I think mental health in this country is just so woefully underfunded, and there's still such a stigma about it. So I think the more that people can talk about their experiences or what they think about it, the better, because it is so common. But yeah, just that reminder that everything is a process, and it offers some light during those darker moments. And so I love it. And just her voice, I mean, how is it possible to have that remarkable a voice? I have no idea.
Do you have a personality trait which you're most proud of or grateful for?
I think probably my sense of humour. Like, I think humour is so important, and it's what I look for in my, it's what I look for in my partner, in my friends. And I think even in the kind of midst of real darkness, I think if you can find a funny side, then that is, it's just really helpful. And there's nothing better in life than someone making you laugh so much that you almost feel sick and your stomach is killing. I think humour is number one for me. And so I hope that I can make people laugh. And I try and make our work a really fun and funny place to be as well. And it just really changes the vibe, and not to the extent that when people just are not in the mood, like, you must laugh. It's again that emotional intelligence thing again. But I think there is always a time for being made to laugh or to make someone else laugh. It's brilliant.
Can you now tell me about your seventh song?
Yes, so my seventh song is by someone called Lauren Daigle, and it's called You Say. And if you heard it and you thought that you were listening to Adele, I don't think you'd be alone. She's quite a recent singer-songwriter. I think she's from the States, not sure where, but she's been on the radio quite a bit recently, and I listened to her her song You Say, and it's really beautiful. I mean, she has a stunning voice, but it's actually around identity, and probably kind of moving on from that kind of mental well-being discussion. It's actually a song about God, and I actually have a quite strong faith. I've kind of had my ups and downs with religion, but this song, it really kind of strips away all the kind of rubbish around religion, and it gets to kind of the heart of what faith actually is, and this idea that it is more of a relationship. And this song kind of reminds me that whatever is going on around us, and especially right now, and how you're feeling about yourself, this song is a really refreshing reminder that there is this constant, well, I believe there's this kind of constant and this kind of power that that you can go to in the midst of all the kind of the crazy that is our world today. So I love listening to that. It's a real kind of encouragement.
And what's your favourite thing about being at the LSE?
I love the LSE, and it's the reason I've been there for so long. I keep wondering whether I should get a new job, but I just love the energy of the students. When we do off-site visits, or when we go to, I don't know, when we do an international trek, what is often commented on is the way that the students ask questions, and there is so much in those questions that are just so insightful and interesting. And just being surrounded by that energy and knowledge and intelligence and desire to create a better tomorrow, especially in the work that I do, is awesome and such a privilege. An example of that would be this space that we signed on just before lockdown. It was going to be this brilliant innovation centre, and it still will be. But it ended up being empty for a while, and the students, they were just so frustrated at the kind of inability to do anything in lockdown, that they took over the space and they just transformed it overnight into this COVID response centre. And they created a place where we could collect the founder products and any essential items, and they collected them and distributed them to vulnerable groups. They had these 3D printers that they created PPE out of, and it was just an example of how awesome the students are, and they continue to surprise me. And someone mentioned that you have this, it's called a duvet flipping moment in the morning when you just can't wait to get to work. And that has been me for the last few years. I mean, there's the odd day where I just cannot be bothered, obviously. I'm human. but yeah, it's such a cool place to work. And it will definitely be something that I look back on when I do retire. And it will really be a really special time, I think, for me.
Wow. And finally, can you tell me about your eighth and final song?
Yes, so the eighth and final song is Beyond the Sea, which I'm sure you'll get in your head now for the rest of the day, because it did the same with me when I was thinking about what would be my final song. And I think it's been sung by loads of people, including Frank Sinatra, Robbie Williams, Will Young. And it was the CD, you know, in the days of CDs, I went away to Italy with my best friend for a week to learn the language just before we studied. And it was, yeah, as I said, in the days of CDs, and we only had space for about three CDs, so this song was on loop. But it's such an uplifting song, and it reminds me of just those days where we just sat on our balcony dancing and singing to it. And again, it's, I think female friendship is just brilliant. I think you, it's like that TV example where you have moments of kind of discussing everything in life and then just these hilarious moments, and that song reminds me of those times. And then recently, in a totally different context, my poor grandma was super ill in hospital, and I went, and the doctors were kind of umming and ahhing about whether she'd make it through the night, and they said you might want to call the rabbi in. And it was really sad. And this volunteer, one of these kind of London, East London hipsters, came by with his ukulele. And you could totally imagine him going off for some craft brew and some hot yoga afterwards. And he asked if there was a song that my grandma would like. And I just remember dancing with my grandma to this ages ago. And so I asked if we could play that. And he played it on his little ukulele. And then I said these really emotional goodbyes, because obviously I thought I would never see her again. And then apparently they gave her some jelly that evening, and it worked wonders, and she was up the next day. And so it was actually slightly awkward going to see her again after this big kind of farewell that I'd done with them, being serenaded by this London hipster. And I was like, hi grandma, how's it going? And she's still alive and kicking, and she's brilliant. But yeah, that song has a lot of meaning for me.
So you're allowed to take with you the Bible, the beverage report, and a book of your choice. What book are you going to be taking with you?
So while I've been answering all of the other questions, my mind has been kind of going between all of the books that I think are on my shortlist, and I just couldn't decide. It's such a tough one. But I think I will go for, I don't know if you've heard of Charlie Maxey, or was it Charlie McKenzie? I should probably check that before I told you my choice. But the book's called The Boy, the Mole, the Fox and the Horse. And it's become, I think it's kind of sold out during lockdown, and it kind of preempted this feeling of kind of loneliness and isolation during lockdown. And it's just, yeah, it's sold, I think it's sold over 1 million copies over the last few months. And it was just really prophetic. And it kind of predicted the emotions that so many people were going to go through. It's basically a book of illustrations with these kind of gentle meanings, and the illustrations just evoke so many thoughts. So I thought, even if there aren't that many words, just looking at the pictures would evoke a lot of kind of interesting memories and feelings. And I imagine if you're alone on a desert island, you'd get a bit lonely and sometimes get a bit down. And these are brilliant kind of little kind of pick me ups for those times. I really like that book. So that is my choice.
Fabulous. And then finally, but not to be forgotten about, your luxury item.
Yeah, so my parents came round last week with this bin bag of letters and really embarrassing pictures, some super dodgy haircuts in there, and just memories and yearbooks. And they were about to chuck it out, but they found it and they said, do you want this? They're really paranoid about getting corona. And so they rang on the doorstep, they rang the doorbell, they put this bag, like some scene out of Homeland, and then they stepped back and I opened the door and picked it up, and it was like some dodgy drugs deal taking place. But the important thing is what was in there, which was just a whole load of my childhood memories that I'd totally forgotten about. And it just reminded me of kind of where I kind of come from and what I'd experienced, and also to understand better what my daughters are going to go through, going through teenage years, which obviously isn't always the easiest time, but just to remind myself of what I was thinking and what I was living through that time. So I would definitely take that if I'm allowed. It's not luxury in terms of kind of diamonds and jewelry, but it's definitely valuable to me.
Very nice. So what was it, what was the specific item again?
So it was a bag. Can I have a bag full of diaries?
Go on, I think we can
let that one bag.
Brilliant. Well, thank you, LJ, for telling me about your job filing jams and Book and Lottery.
Thank you so much. That was so fun.